This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. Our hour of crime begins with crime classics this week. We'll hear the September 7th, 1953 episode, The Torment of Henrietta Robinson and Why She Killed. After that, it's Whitehall 1212 and The Case of the Winchester Bottles, their story from September 14th, 1952.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. You have just been within earshot of a drowning. Not such a drowning as will cause shouts of alarm throughout the world, nor even a headline. Just tears, quiet remorse. For the lady who is weeping just drowned her doll, and a part of her life, and a part of her reason. She'll go on from here to people. She'll go on from here to kill by poison. So tonight, my report to you on the torment of Henrietta Robinson and why she killed.
Crime Classics, a new series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
The year is 1845 in the city of Troy, New York. It was summer, and the Trojans were all excited about the town's 56th anniversary, and showing it. Each weekend, the banks of the Hudson were strewn anew with burned-out fireworks and chicken bones, and the broken crockery mixed well with empty clam shells. The scene we're interested in took place on a Sunday in summer twilight, and has to do with a boy and a girl. They found an idyllic spot, as young lovers will do, which consisted of this: a grove of white birch and sumac, and a pond, a clear and shallow pond of still water and sandy bottom, and a soft, warm breeze. Young lover?
Just sit as you are, Henrietta.
Young lover?
Like this?
Oh, happy time, gentle time.
So I can remember how beautiful you are.
To you, Joseph, I'd lower my eyes, but that I wish to look at you constantly.
Henrietta.
Yes?
The doll.
Here. You may hold her. You may go to Joseph Cecily. Take her. She likes you.
No.
No?
Listen, dear.
What?
Why do you bring her always with us? Why do you pretend she's a person?
Well, she is. Aren't you, Cecily? She is.
My sister threw away her dolls at 15, and you're 17. And because one day I hoped...
Shh.
What?
Shh. This world we're in, the quietness of it, trees and the sky, how very blue it is. And look there at the wildflowers. The hummingbird.
And you.
And you, dear Joseph.
May I kiss you?
Oh, please don't. There, I protested. Now kiss me. Oh, wait.
What are you doing?
Cecily's watching. I'll turn her face about. Stop it.
Henrietta.
You're making fun. Stop it.
All right.
I'll show you.
Oh, dear, what...
Show you!
Henrietta, put down that stone. Henrietta!
No one will ever know.
What?
This place we're in. This time. And how we love each other. Ask me again, Joseph.
About what?
Not to go back home to Quebec. To write my parents that I've found my true love. And you want to marry me and keep me here.
I do.
You were going to kiss me. Please kiss me. Cecily didn't watch.
And silent screamings, but most of us don't throw stones at people. Henrietta Robinson did, and she treated her doll like it was a person. But outside of that, Henrietta was quite a successful girl of 17. Her small, quick angers were rare intervals between serenities and sweetnesses. She was beautiful and fairly formed, and possessed of a background of elegance and wealth. Her parents in Quebec had realized a considerable fortune from a fox trap, much used in the Hudson's Bay area. When Henrietta's mother received a letter from Troy, New York, which stated that her daughter was deeply in love, she summoned her husband immediately from his fox traps and held family council, a result of which Henrietta was summoned home from her school in the United States. And as soon as she entered the house, a scene was made.
I will not have it. I will not have it.
Imagine.
But I love him truly.
I forbid it. You hear me? I forbid it.
How could you? Joseph is handsome and he's gentle.
A farmer's son. No background.
Oh, I'm so ashamed.
I'm not. I want him for my very own. What joy to hold him.
Oh.
And when he kissed me, heaven was closed.
Oh.
And he will be mine forever and ever. No matter how hard you hit that table, Father.
Oh, girl, listen to me. You will not marry a farmer boy. You will not ever see him again, nor think of him. And as for marriage, you will marry whom I say.
And his name is George Lotius.
And his name is George Lotius. And he is a gentleman and a horseman and a soldier, and has wealth and castles in England. He has seen a portrait of you and loves you madly.
What are you doing, Henrietta?
And he...
John, look at her.
And he...
Henrietta, what's wrong with you?
Stop carving up my table with my letter open up.
Child. Henrietta.
She ruined a fine Regency table, her father's favorite for pounding. But nevertheless, she did meet George Lotius. And, surprisingly enough, they got along well together.
Can you imagine Lady Melville dropping her fan at such a moment?
And later?
Take a card, dear Henrietta.
This one?
Anyone at all.
You take one, Cecily. Here, I'll help you.
You... I mean, your doll took the three of spades.
Oh, that's very close.
He wasn't very successful with card tricks, but he was an expert horseman, a daredevil of the high jumps.
Oh, it's exciting watching you, George. Isn't it, Cecily?
Give us your hand. Up we go. Now, hold tight. Now, you got it. Take the square.
And one night, in a place young people always seem to find, beneath a maple tree whose leaves shone silver under the first autumn moon.
I believe Cecily likes me, Henrietta.
Oh, she does.
And you?
Cecily wouldn't like you unless I did.
Henrietta, I've loved you since the moment I saw your portrait. What are you doing?
You'll want to kiss me, won't you? I'm turning Cecily's head away.
Oh.
Now you may kiss me.
Dear Henrietta, I said, dear Henrietta.
Daddy wants me to marry you.
Will you?
And Mother wants me to marry you.
Will you? Well?
Let's marry him, Cecily.
Night, Henrietta. Where are you? Henrietta!
Fire!
What has happened to you? Why are you teasing the stallion? What's happened? Come, I'll take you back to the house.
No!
You're my wife. You'll do as I say.
No!
Wife!
Hold me.
It was the beginning of October when they set off for George's home in Europe. They booked passage on a steamer out of New York. And to get there, they stopped overnight at Troy.
I must do some last-minute shopping, George.
But why are you taking Cecily?
Cecily always liked Troy.
And the two of them, Henrietta and her doll Cecily, instead of shopping, went down to a place which consisted of this. A grove of white birch and sumac, almost leafless now, and a pond of water growing cold. A place dying the season's death, but remembered for the time when young lovers sat in summer. And one was called Henrietta, and the other...
Joseph. Joseph. Gone are you, Joseph. Where are you? Are you dead? Are you dead, Joseph? And cold? Go to him, Cecily. And warm him.
She just drowned her doll and a part of her life and a part of her reason and grew closer to violence. Closer. The year was 1849, the time when everyone was heading toward California and Mr. Sutter's farm. But Henrietta and husband George Locius set sail for England. It was a leisurely and serene trip under sail, marred only by one occasion. One of the voyagers on the last night out claimed that Henrietta tried to push him into the sea. The statement, however, was met with disbelief, since there had been a gay party aboard and everyone had dressed like pirates and there was much mock villainy and talk of walking the gangplank. In England, George Locius brought his wife to his estate a few miles north of London. Here they lived the life of English aristocracy, riding to hounds, puttering among the primroses, and having two children. It was the good life in a drafty mansion. There was, however, a servant problem. It seems that every upstairs maid got the feeling somehow that Henrietta was trying to throw her off one parapet or another. Each, in her turn, the maid would complain to Squire Locius, who would do this. That's the way George scoffed. And he would do this.
Here's a week's wages, and I'll write you a letter of reference. Please pack your bags and leave.
But on about the sixth upstairs maid, this happened.
And I'll write you a letter of reference, and please back your bags. No. Wait here a moment. Come in, Henrietta.
Just a minute. Now you may come in.
I want to talk to you, Henrietta.
Do you like this gown, George? It came from Paris this morning.
I never like you in black. You know that. Why are you always wearing black these days? And why...
Why what?
Why have you taken to wearing that heavy black veil when you go about?
You know.
No. No, I don't.
Of course you do. To confuse them.
Oh, now, Henrietta.
Is that what you wanted to talk with me about, George?
Hester said you tried to push her off the east parapet.
Oh?
She said she was shaking the mop and you came up behind her and pushed her.
Wouldn't you?
What are you talking about?
She's one of the people, George.
Oh, now, for heaven's sake, what are you...
Oh, it's entirely a matter of self-preservation. She was put here to get rid of me.
Hester, to get rid of you?
One of the people. Come to the window with me, George. See there?
What?
Don't pretend.
What am I supposed to see?
Oh, it's useless to talk with you.
But what am I supposed to see?
Simply what's there out in the garden. The faces.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And something else I'll show you, too. This.
A pistol? Really, now? When did you buy a pistol?
If they should try to come close to me...
Henrietta! In the name of...
Whether or not she was aiming at George, we cannot know. And we do know she didn't hit him. We do know that when she deserted him and their two children and returned to this country, he made no effort to bring her back. Nor did he ever have any trouble keeping an upstairs maid. Of the further history of George, we know nothing definite. We can assume he brought up his children to be every inch as good an Englishman as he, and as good horsemen, and probably much better at card tricks, and undoubtedly more finicky about wives. Henrietta went directly to Troy, New York. And of her stay here, I'd like to quote a bit from a newspaper of the day. Henrietta Robinson, as so she called herself, was found wandering through the city clothed in night apparel. She drank and raved over her broken hopes. She was found groping in the dark through the halls of public buildings, inquiring for the police office, and demanding of authority assistance to protect her against imagined persecutions. She wandered about the city armed with her revolver and presented it on several occasions at the breast of anyone who had the curiosity to observe her movements. So we have come to the point in the history of Henrietta when she had become a very real menace. But no one did anything about it. They let her roam and wander and grope and present her revolver, and one day she was no longer young. And one dusk in the springtime, she wandered down to a certain pond, which was surrounded by birch and sumac. And there was a youth there.
Hello.
Oh, good evening.
Isn't this a lovely place?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I stumbled upon it.
Is your name Joseph?
Why, no.
Sit with me.
I'd like to. Do you, come here often?
Whenever I can.
Why?
To sit here. To look into the pond.
Why?
I try to remember why. I always try to remember. There's something... I don't know.
I was waiting for someone.
A girl?
Yes, but she's very late. I suppose she'll not come. I'd best be going.
Oh, wait. Sit here with me for a while. Talk to me.
Talk to you?
Is your name Joseph?
I have to go.
If you leave me again, I'll kill you.
What?
I would.
But that's a real gun.
I would.
I have no money. I don't understand. Please, I was only waiting for...
Where did you go when you went from me long ago? Don't be frightened of me. See, I'll put away this ugly thing, this pistol. No, don't be frightened. You always go away. And there's always the sound of you going away. Then why do I come here? To this pond. And remember. Remember what? Remember what?
All you get. Buy me a drink. Buy me a drink. Kitty.
You've had enough.
I know. But you're a friend of mine and you're also the barmaid here.
And you have no money.
No. Kitty.
No drink.
Lend me $2.
I don't have it.
Then I'll lend you some. Hundreds.
You ought to go home.
Please, Kitty. A drink. Kitty.
Hey, Henrietta.
I was asking Kitty to buy me a drink. Tell her how good my credit is, Mr. Lanigan.
You ought to go home.
Your barmaid thinks my credit's no good. Tell her how good it is.
Here in my place, you got no credit.
Dance with me, Mr. Lanigan.
Huh?
Come on. Dance with me.
Oh, get away from me.
Oh, you won't. That fella there just came in, Will. Young man.
Well, now, sister.
Young man, will you dance with me? And having danced with me, will you buy me a drink?
Danced what?
Dum, 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 dum. That. Well?
Well, sure, I'll dance with you.
Dum, 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 dum. There, young man. Did you enjoy your dance? Then buy me a drink.
What's your pleasure?
A kitty. Gin. Gin's my pleasure.
Well, drink away.
Young man.
Yeah.
Another?
Well, sure. Hey, Lanigan, where are you going with that gin bottle?
She can't have no more.
Young man, tell him.
Lanigan's saloon, sister. He said what goes.
I danced with you.
You got your gin?
Get out of here, Henrietta.
What a way to talk.
Can I take her home, Mr. Lanigan?
Just get her out of here.
Come on, Henrietta.
Don't touch me. Don't touch me.
I told you to get out of here. Now I want you out of here. I'll
let go of me. Stop it. Down.
Still could have stopped her. Someone who could see the stricken face, hear the mumblings, and realize that such a woman, one who brandished a gun every place she went, one who lived in a world of tortured fancies, and set the cry for someone named Joseph tumbling down alleys and dark streets, and always there was the gun. Someone still could have stopped her. But no one did. She was a whole night away from murder. No one stopped her. Perhaps it was because she was a familiar sight in Troy by this time. Perhaps it was because the Trojans hadn't run out of their jokes about her. Perhaps it was because of the way she finally killed. She pawned her gun for $3. Then she went to a druggist. She bought $2 worth of arsenic. In the early afternoon, she was as sober as she had been for a year. She went back to Lanigan's saloon. Arsenic hidden, but waving her last dollar bill.
Good afternoon, Kitty. Here, take this money.
Oh, you don't owe us anything? She owe us anything, Mr. Lanigan.
Well, if she does, we'll forget it.
That's kind.
Yeah. Mind if I tell you something, Henrietta?
Yes.
When you're like this, when you're sober, you're almost what I'd call pretty.
Now, don't you start that like the rest.
Why, I was only drunk.
Now, don't you start that. That's all.
Oh, he didn't mean anything. He was telling the truth. I bet you're a real beauty when you're my age.
Henrietta.
Yes?
Someone once told me you were married to an English baron or something.
I think so. I think I was. I think I had...
I fetch you a comb. I comb your hair if you want.
If the both of you will join me in coffee first.
I'll get some from the urn.
No, let me. I love to serve.
I'd consider it a pleasure.
And I would, too.
Just turn that brass spigot on the urn. Did you hear me? I said...
Well, I was just getting the cups ready. Do you wish them sweetened?
No.
Nor I.
Yours, Kitty, and Mr. Lanigan.
Thank you.
Where's yours?
I'll get it. Now, we can all sit and chat.
Is this that new brand coffee, Mr. Lanigan?
Well, no. This tastes funny, doesn't it?
I remember now.
What?
About England. There was a huge mansion, and I was lady over all of it. Would you like to hear about it?
Oh, yes.
Drink your coffee, and I'll tell you. It was a very large house, I think. And it sat upon a gentle hill.
Strange taste.
What did you say?
Oh, nothing. I'm sorry I interrupted. Go on.
And it was drafty. But there were great roaring fires. And sometimes in the great hall.
Kitty, the barmaid, died from arsenic poisoning that night. Mr. Lanigan, the next morning. Henrietta was tried and found guilty of murder and sentenced to hang. There were murmurings, however, and talk of insanity. And one bright young lawyer made a plea based on the responsibility of society toward a tormented woman. On the basis of this plea, Henrietta was not hanged. They put her in prison where she sat for the rest of her life behind bars and a black veil. And this is the story of the world and Henrietta Robinson. Henrietta Robinson, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Sammy Hill was heard as Henrietta. Featured in the cast were Betty Harford, Joseph Kearns, Sam Edwards, Lamont Johnson, Paula Winslow, and Ben Wright. Bob Lamond speaking.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
1212.
For the first time in its history, Scotland Yard opens its official files to bring you the true stories of some of its most baffling cases.
These are the true stories. The plain, unvarnished facts, just as they occurred, reenacted for you by an all-British cast. Only the names have, for obvious reasons, been changed. The broadcasts are produced with the full cooperation of Scotland Yard.
Research for Whitehall 1212 is provided by Percy Hoskins, chief crime reporter of the London Daily Express. The stories for radio are written and directed by Willis Cooper. And this voice is that of the custodian of Scotland Yard's famous Black Museum, Chief Superintendent John Davidson.
Good afternoon. Someone's put this so far back on the shelf. Here it is. This is what is known as a Winchester bottle. This one is the 80-ounce size, half a gallon. There are 20 ounces in an English pint. A Winchester bottle is frequently used in hospitals for the storage of liquids which are shortly to be used. Milk, for example. That's what this one was used for. You will note that there are two fairly clear fingerprints on it here. Here, ringed with the chalk marks. There were once a great many more, but all have disappeared except these two, which have been covered with a plastic solution to preserve them. These are a murderer's fingerprints. These are the clues which put Scotland Yard and the Lancashire Constabulary onto him. He was, of course, hanged. Now perhaps you'd like to hear what was done to find him. Chief Inspector Leslie Crawford here was in on the most of it.
4 years ago, I was a hard-working chief inspector at Scotland Yard. I didn't know how hard an officer could work before this case. I was roused at 3 a.m. by a telephone call from a town in Lancashire. Their chief constable was calling.
I'm sorry to ruin your night's sleep, chief inspector, but there's been an atrocious murder here, and you're wanted at once. I've cleared everything with the people at the Home Office and at the Yard, and we shall leave you at once.
I'll take the first train, sir. Who's been murdered?
Four-year-old girl has been murdered near the hospital where she was ill. There are certain clues, not very many.
I arrived in the town of Blackburn at an excessively early hour, was met at the train by a police car of the Blackburn Borough Force and rushed at once to Queen's Park Hospital. There were a great many people there, hospital attendants and police officers. The body of the little girl, whose name was Mary Margaret, was in the hospital morgue. Her head had been smashed by a vicious blow, and there were bruises on her bare ankles. The chief constable explained that.
As if she'd been held by the ankles and her head dashed against the wall.
Is that a guess, sir?
The wall's out there, Chief Inspector. Down the little hill there.
Right on the hospital grounds?
Yes.
Your clues you spoke of, sir.
Well, I think, Nurse Rollins.
Yes, sir.
In here, please, Nurse Rollins. This is the sister that was on duty. Chief Inspector, Nurse Rollins.
Yes, sir.
Go on, please.
Well, sir, that little Mary Margaret was asleep with the other children.
How many of them?
Four others, sir. Three girls and one boy.
Go on, please.
I was in the kitchen. I'm on night duty and we're short-handed. Preparing food for them for tomorrow. And
this is a small hospital. So far as we're able to determine now, no other nurses were about.
The watchman?
Well,
I see. Go on, please, Nurse Roland.
Well, I was cutting bread and I heard a sound in the children's ward. I went in, and one of the other children was crying. I picked her up and took her out to the kitchen, gave her bread and jam.
Were they?
Mary Margaret was in her bed when I come in. and also when I returned with the other little girl after her bread and jam. I bent over and kissed Mary Margaret.
Yes.
And the trolley with the empty Winchester bottles was standing alongside the wall. I saw it.
What's that?
Wait.
Then, about 10 minutes later...
That would be at about 15 minutes after midnight.
Yes. I heard the dog barking, and I was afraid it'd wake up one of the children.
Why are the children here?
Oh, various minor kids' diseases, influenza and so on. They're all very poor.
As I glanced in the door, the first thing I noticed was that one of the Winchester bottles had been moved from the trolley.
What's the trolley?
Sort of little table on wheels.
Oh, yes.
One of the Winchester bottles had been taken from it, and I saw it lying in the corner.
We have the bottle.
Go on, sister.
Then I saw Mary Margaret was gone. I ran to her bed. Sure enough, she was gone.
Had she been asleep?
Oh, yes, she didn't wake up, even when I kissed her.
Miss Rowland is tired.
Oh, don't mind me, please.
What did you do then?
I ran back to the kitchen, through the switch that turns on all the lights.
That summons the watchman to the main building, of course.
And I looked out the window. I saw what I thought might be a little nightgown. Then I ran into the ward again to see if I could have been mistaken. But it wasn't. She was gone. I cried out to the watchman, Mary Margaret was gone. And he ran outside and... Oh, it seemed such a long time. He come back with her. It was a nightgown I saw.
Then what?
Well, that's all, sir. I called the police. They're all here now, sir.
The Winchester bottle, did you see any fingerprints on it or anything?
Well, I...
There are two well-defined prints on it, which are apparently new. There are also quite a number of old ones, rather smudged. But the two are fresh.
Why, then...
We think they're the murderer's prints.
This is from the murderer's confession 4 months later. Of course, we had no idea of it at the time.
I was outside the building. I admit I'd had something to drink.
Investigation at the time of his arrest revealed that he had drunk 6 bottles of bitter beer, 2 double rums, a bottle of Guinness, and 6 or 8 more bottles of bitter.
But I wasn't drunk, really. I don't remember how I got to the hospital or why. But there I was, looking in the window. I saw the nurse carrying the other kid to the kitchen and feeding her and bringing her back and kissing Mary Margaret and going out again. Then I thought I ought to go and see Mary Margaret. That's a nice name for a kid, isn't it? So I unlaced my shoes and took them off, and I could hear the nurse singing to herself, and the outside door that leads to the ward was open, so I just sneaked in and took her. She wasn't sure who I was, but she wasn't much scared at all, I didn't think. She started to laugh like, but I told her to stop. Oh, I picked up that Winchester bottle to see if there was anything in it to drink, but there wasn't, and I set it on the floor before I scooped Mary Margaret out of her cot. Nobody heard me, I'm sure. Oh, yes, when I came back to get my shoes, I left them on the porch. There was a dog barking. I thought I'd make him stop, but he stopped anyway. I was halfway across the field when I saw the lights come on in the hospital, and I hurried. Mary Margaret was still lying there by the stone wall.
The sun was just rising when I went into the ward from which the child had been taken. The other children had been awakened and taken away, so I couldn't tell at that time which had been Mary Margaret's cot. The floor had been freshly painted a day or so before, and the sun, slanting across from one of the east windows, showed me something that stopped me in my tracks. It was a collection of footprints and the fresh paint. Remember now, at this juncture, I'd heard nothing of what you have just heard. I called Nurse Rowlands. Whose are those? I asked.
I don't know, sir. I never saw them before. It's only because the sunlight's hitting them this way that they're too large to be one of the nurses.
Stand away from them, please. We'll have them photographed.
Whose do you think they are, sir?
Additional moves. I saw the Winchester bottle in question. There were two clear fingerprints on it. One of a left thumb and one of a left forefinger. The fingerprint photographer copied them at once after carefully powdering them with white zinc oxide. The bottle itself was of dark greenish glass. And we had our first collection of prints complete. But possessing a set of prints and placing your hand on a murderer's shoulder are two different things. I talked with the chief constable.
Yes, we have several thousand fingerprints on file here in Blackburn. And the Lancashire Constabulary has a large collection too. I'll get copies of these prints down to a laboratory at once. And as soon as their prints are ready, I'll pass them on to the Lancashire people.
I've already passed the word to send them to the CRO at the yard.
CRO? Oh, the Criminal Records Office.
We ought to be of help. We've got a million or more prints, all indexed.
All I hope is some of us have the right one. If he's a habitual criminal and has any kind of record.
Yes.
But what else can we do?
You've looked at the grass out there in the field where she was found, of course.
Early this morning. Nothing there. The dew's taken care of that. And no fingerprints in the child's cot or anywhere else, so far as we can find.
You think it was a local man?
No way of knowing or even guessing now.
Yes.
What are you going to do? Ask everyone, did you murder a little girl last night, sir?
Not very satisfactory.
Not very.
The bottle.
What about the bottle?
The fingerprints.
Oh.
Yes.
Meaning what?
The other fingerprints on it.
I've been thinking of that. Things positively gummy. Probably 9 million other prints on it.
Well, we'll have to check them also.
All of them.
Well, we can't get very far till we find out who made the others. Have to do it.
It'll take years.
But it has to be done, sir.
Of course.
But it has to be done. Checking and identifying is, what was it the American staff officers used to say? It's of the essence.
Of course, but,
Well, cheer up, sir. I'm asking for a crew of fingerprint technicians to be sent up from Scotland Yard. They'll make short work of it. I hope.
I wonder how many there'll be to check.
Millions, I'm afraid. Every nurse in the place that might have touched it, every workman...
Every patient.
Well, not only the present ones, but everyone that's been here since the bottle was washed last.
Doctors.
Technicians.
Clerks.
Watchmen.
Deliverymen.
Cleaners.
Relatives of patients.
Everyone that's been here since this bottle was last washed. We checked them all. There were no fingerprints on record at Queen's Park Hospital, so we checked everyone. It was grueling work. And we were obliged to take more than 3,000 prints before we were satisfied that we had everyone. Some of them required journeys as far away as Blackpool and Lancaster, but at last, it took a month and a day, we were satisfied that we knew all about the owner of each print on the bottle. That is all except the newest pair, the thumb and forefinger of the left hand of a person unknown.
I give it to you as my considered opinion that those are the murderer's prints.
I must agree with you.
They're the only ones that we don't know about.
Very likely he's all right.
All we have to do is to identify them.
Yes. There aren't any other clues yet?
None.
I understand the whole town of Blackburn's upset.
There's been a good deal of, shall I say, unrest.
Yes, I know. One of my sergeants was hit by half a brick last night.
And hurt badly?
No. He was cycling back to the town, and he heard someone mutter something about lazy cops. That was all he heard. Good thing he was wearing his helmet.
One of my men had a telephone call from a woman he didn't recognize at his home early this morning.
They want action.
Hmm.
If passed the word.
To whom?
Institutions and so on.
To every police force of any size in England. I asked them to print every drunk, every unaccounted for dead man, every suicide, every tramp.
And no results?
None yet. Of course, they're still coming in. I don't have much confidence in it.
You think it was a local man?
Well,
I wonder.
Well, I think you'll agree that whoever it was knew a great deal about the hospital here and its layout.
Seems reasonable.
I wish we had fingerprints of everybody like they have in some of those places on the continent. No, I don't either.
No, we just got rid of Hitler. We can only have things like that with another Hitler.
Which God forbid.
I'm in.
Well?
I know how.
How?
Let's fingerprint everybody.
You are listening to Whitehall 1212, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper. The story today, like all the stories heard on Whitehall 1212, is compiled from the official files of Scotland Yard and is true in all respects except the names of the participants. Inspector Crawford of Scotland Yard has just made an unheard of suggestion to the chief constable of the city of Blackburn in a desperate effort to unmask the murder of the little girl Mary Margaret. The chief constable is speaking.
You can't do that, my dear Crawford.
Can't do what?
Why, force everyone, force anyone to be fingerprinted. Not in England.
Yes, we can.
How?
Well, not order them to do it, because if I know Englishmen, you won't get anywhere.
I should say not. They'd mob you.
If I order them to, yes.
It's never been done before, fingerprinting a whole town.
I'm afraid it'll have to be done, sir.
Crawford, look here. This town has a population of 130,000.
And one of them is a murderer.
Yes.
A particularly atrocious man.
Well?
And everyone in the town wants to turn him up.
I don't think it can be done.
It's never been done, that's true.
No.
That's not to say it can't be done.
Would you print everyone?
Every man?
Yes, I'm sure it's a man.
I'll try all the men first, and then...
Oh, I don't think it's a woman, Crawford. Those prints are obviously a man's. And that footprint we found, that's a man's footprint.
Well, shall we get started then?
Never heard of such...
Have you any alternate suggestions?
Well...
Have you any alternate suggestions?
Well... But...
What's to be gained by waiting?
Haven't enough policemen.
We'll get them.
I don't know.
Don't you think the people of Blackburn want to find this fellow Chief Constable?
Well...
Well, indeed.
We fail.
We? Everybody's failed up to now.
Yes, I know.
I realize it's an unprecedented thing, sir. I know, but we have an important set of fingerprints, which we all suspect to be the criminals. If we can find the duplicate of that set here, we'll be doing no more than our duty, sir.
I know, but to fingerprint a whole town?
Why else would we find him?
But in England, sir!
I can't believe that an Englishman will stand aside when it's his obvious duty to lay a child's murder by the heel, sir. I'm afraid I can't explain to you how unheard of it is to set such an enterprise in motion in England. The Englishman is perhaps the freest man on earth. To indulge in such a thing as freely handing his fingerprints to the police is most incredible, even for such a cause. But the Englishman is also an unusual being. While we had expected opposition to the scheme, we were amazed at the response. The mayor of Blackburn spoke to the townspeople. Ministers in their pulpits urged everyone to cooperate. The wives of the citizens urged their men to get their fingerprints. I got 20 more men from Scotland Yard. The chief constable of Blackburn supplied 20 more. The Lancashire Special Constabulary sent volunteers. Boy Scouts, Girl Guides. Everyone cooperated.
In order to eliminate trips to the police stations, we sent pairs of constables and others to every house on the electoral rolls to urge every man to give us his prints.
The first man to be printed was the mayor, publicly. His example was a good one. Many women volunteered to give their prints also. But it was not as easy as I expected.
A few Englishmen at first.
No, you may not have my fingerprints, sir. I've lived for 77 years in this town and no man ever seen my fingerprints. Am I a criminal, sir?
It took three of us to talk that one out of it.
What'll you do when you find my fingerprints and all the others aren't the right ones, sir?
We'll destroy them, sir. We'll put them all in a pulping machine and chop them up into little bits and bury the bits. Mm-hmm. Nurse Rowlands from Queen's Park was one of our most devoted assistants. Well, they put her under this stubborn fella.
Come on, Mr. Hodges. Don't you want to help?
I ain't going to let anybody take my fingerprints like a dumb criminal now.
Don't you want to help find the beast that killed little Mary Margaret, Mr. Hodges? Now?
I didn't kill her.
Well, of course you didn't. Neither did I. And I gave them my fingerprints straight away, Mr. Hodges. And so did the rector of St. Pancras.
Why should he give his? A rector.
St. Pancras is the patron saint of children, Mr. Hodges.
Oh, is he now?
Don't you like children, Mr. Hodges?
Being as how I've got three, old enough to be your father, your mother either, and nine grandchildren, Geordie would have been 47 come next Whitsuntide if he hadn't died of yellow jaundice in America. And 14 great-grandchildren. Do you think I don't love children then, Nurse Maggie Rowlands? Answer that. But I won't have no fingerprints taken, and that there's the last word. I'm a Lancashireman, and a Lancashireman's home is his castle, and...
Wouldn't your little great-granddaughter Sheila be just about the age Mary Margaret was, Mr. Hodges?
How old was she?
She was just 4, Mr. Hodges.
Sheila was 4 the day before yesterday. Oh, my.
Now just give me your left hand, Mr. Hodges. Here, we'll press your thumb down here on the ink. And then...
My finger now. Don't forget my finger. Just the same age as little Sheila. I wondered if I could buy Sheila a little box of sweets over there at yon counter.
Are you wondering about the murderer?
Well, I knowed about all the fingerprinting, of course. Everybody did, but somehow or other the cops missed my house. They come the next day and I said, no, you've got my dabs, I said, and you've thrown them away because I wasn't the one. And I laughed. Well, it was a great hulking young constable from Scotland Yard itself, and he'd never been outside London, he hadn't, so he believed me. And anyhow, you can't make an Englishman give the cops his fingerprints.
And so we missed him. We missed a few others, too, although we had a pack of prints that would strangle a horse.
Not there. And that was after 2 weeks of checking the cards.
Afraid not.
Those are the fingerprints of every male between the ages of 16 and 60 in Blackburn.
No, they're not, sir.
Hey, what's that?
What's that?
That isn't all of them, sir.
Correspond with the electoral rolls, Nurse Rowlands?
There are 30,000 cards here, Nurse.
I don't care. That hasn't all of them, sir. Begging your pardon.
Who have we missed?
There was hundreds of servicemen on leave here in Blackburn the night Mary Margaret was murdered, sir. Soldiers, sailors.
They've all gone back to their stations, Nurse.
There's a record of them, sir.
That might be...
Well, they're all over the world.
Be a lot of work.
Let's get the circulars out.
Circular letters to every organization from which any man was known to be on leave in Blackburn on the night of May 15 to 16, 1948.
About 190 letters with a question fingerprints and an urgent request for reply.
Then, on the chance that there might have been one unaccounted serviceman in Blackburn that night, letters to the police departments in every section of the world where British servicemen were stationed.
Letters to the police of Canada, South Africa, Germany, Japan, Denmark, Italy... And a score of other places where the criminal might be.
261 letters.
You didn't find him.
All the fingerprint cards had been destroyed. We didn't have anything.
And the town was muttering again.
3 months had gone by. Not a trace of the murderer, except the anonymous fingerprints, had been discovered.
No wonder they muttered. We had nothing.
We thought of another thing. There were some 600 men living in Blackburn, DPs.
Displaced persons who had made their way to Blackburn in one way or another. There were records of them.
They all marched into the borough hall together and asked to be fingerprinted. We didn't miss one.
We didn't find anyone either. The murderer must have laughed to himself.
They didn't look in the right place.
A new issue of ration books was about to be made.
The old ones were to be turned in with their fingerprint identification. Each one was examined and compared with the copies of the prints on the bottle. It was another hopeless task. But if we had to do it the hard way, that man should be caught. Nurse Rowlands found him. On duty in the Borough Hall, the fourth day of the examination, on the 46,253rd book. Next morning, exactly 90 days after the crime was committed, the Chief Constable and I walked together to 21 Marfield Terrace and arrested the owner of the prints. One Lionel Tomlinson, who had been discharged from the army as a soldier with character indifferent a week before Mary Margaret was murdered.
We took away with us one of the prisoner's wool army socks. The forensic laboratory matched fibers from it to fibers found on the footprints on the floor of the ward. And the fingerprints matched perfectly.
We found out why he did it. Why he murdered four-year-old Mary Margaret.
Quite simple, gents. She's my niece. Don't laugh, gents. I was sorry for the poor little tack. I was home about 2 days when I heard my half-brother and my sister-in-law talking about her. They hadn't any money. Not a farthing. They said they'd have to send Mary Margaret away when she come back from the hospital. Give her up. You know, mates. I love Mary Margaret. I didn't want to have that happen to my darling little niece. I loved her. So that night when I got squiffed out into the hospital and got her and killed her,
I hope it didn't hurt her. But what else was there to do?
The trial attracted a great deal of attention throughout the British Commonwealth. Many thought he should be released. But the termination of the insanity of a criminal is judged by laws which were passed more than a century ago. Thus, after the greatest exposition of the infallibility of the human fingerprint as a clue in British history, Lionel Tomlinson was brought to trial at Castle Lancaster on the 15th of October, 1948. 5 months after he had murdered little Mary Margaret. 4 days later, he was sentenced to be hanged, and the sentence was carried out in December of the same year.
You have heard another true story of Scotland Yard told on Whitehall 1212. Heard today Lester Fletcher as Chief Inspector Crawford. Others in the order of their appearance, Harvey Hayes, Winston Ross, Catherine Hines, Gordon Stern, and Guy Spall. This is Lionel Rico speaking. Whitehall 1212 is written and directed by Willis Cooper. Whitehall 1212 was presented from the NBC studios in Radio City. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
That's going to do it for Case Closed this week. If you want more from Crime Classics, Whitehall 1212, past episodes of this show and everything else Relic Radio, just visit relicradio.com. You'll find it all there, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your support makes all of this possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.